We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Hey, this is the Inside Public Accounting with me, your host, Rob Brown, coming to you from the UK. We're an international show. It's one of the fastest growing podcasts in the world at the moment. And we're going to talk about strategic planning today. It's not just an agenda item for your retreat. It is the blueprint for growth and stability and independence in an increasingly competitive and disrupted landscape. Today, we're talking about how firms can actually thrive through intentional strategy. And there's nobody better to talk about this than Matt Rampe, partner at Rosenberg Associates. Matt, I'm going to get you to say a little bit more about what you do in a minute, but let me tell the audience by way of a little bit of context. I know you spend your days helping CPA firms navigate the toughest question: how do we grow with sustainability? And other things like, how do we invest in technology? And how do we retain top people? And all of these strategic issues. So you've worked with hundreds of firm leaders. You know this space really well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me. Delighted to get into it.
Yes, I know. And you've written a book, Matt. Tell us how that book came about.
Yeah, the book came about both through, I think, a need in the profession and my personal passion. So Rosenberg Associates has been around for 30 years consulting with CPA firms across North America. And this is something that we've been working with firms on for that whole time. But I think, as you kind of alluded to, Rob, the landscape is changing, really. There's more disruption, the changes, waves are faster, and leaders aren't really prepared or educated about how to deal with that. So we took, in addition to what we know well about CPA firms and what works, we took a lot of modern research on psychology and organizational behavior and change management and melded those two things together to give a framework that firms could follow to do good strategic planning, but also be nimble in this time period specifically.
Sounds like a magnum opus. This is an extensive piece of work, Matt, isn't it?
It took about 10 years of my life to kind of culminate into this book.
Let's start at 30,000 feet. And from your perspective, what do you feel are the biggest strategic blind spots in CPA firms today?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's at least two that come to mind. The first one, I would say, is succession planning. And I don't know if that's a blind spot as much as an elephant in the room for a lot of firms I work with. I think people see it coming, but they also don't want to see it coming. So right. I think it's an area that's ignored or hard to deal with. You're dealing with death and transitions and handoffs, and there's a lot of logistics and complexity. So I think that one is strategically a huge topic to deal with that I think doesn't get proper attention. So that's a big one. I think the second one that I would say is more a true blind spot is, as private equity and AI and all the trends come in to raise the competitive bar, the question on my mind and the question I want firms to think about is, where are you going to be? Where can you be number one? What market or specific niche can you be number one in, and how can you defend that niche? I think the competitive landscape was easier in the past, and you could kind of just grow and get by and do on the medium. I think it's fragmenting, and that's going to lead to, how do I outdo anybody in this little area? And I don't think firms are used to thinking about that. So I think that's an important blind spot.
It's a great concept, and I've heard it called the category of one, where you're the only or the best or the foremost or the one that comes top of mind. And I suppose for firms, that there's an element of courage in that, Matt, because they've got to say, well, I think it was, who was it that said it? It was John Maxwell, the famous leadership guru. He said, say no to the good so you can say yes to the great. And in having domination of a niche or a conversation or a narrative, you've got to say no to stuff, haven't you? And firms are not good at that.
Correct. And I think that's absolutely. And I've had partners say, are you asking me to let go of revenue? Does that hurt?
Yeah.
It sounds counterintuitive. I'm not trying to shrink my firm, but I think it is that counterintuitive notion that by focus, we have clarity and we can have a compelling offering, not a mediocre offering.
Well, focus must be an ally of strategy. What we do on the Inside Public Accounting show, Chelsea Summers and I, and the audience will know this, is we like to tell the stories behind the numbers, the Rosenberg survey, the IPA 500, and a lot of other reports that we bring out here. I do know, Matt, that a lot of firms, particularly in that 200 to 500 range, growth is very much on the agenda, but profitability doesn't always keep up. So how do you help partners strike the right balance between chasing that top line revenue and protecting the bottom line. That's a strategic thing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, because that's a zoom all the way back out to the big picture and say, okay, we're growing. We like that. But oops, we lost, you know, we're losing the bottom line. I favor bottom line first. I want to focus on bottom line first and say, you may give up bottom line for growth, but there still has to be a point at which it flips, right? We're not trying to create a less, forever less profitable enterprise. So I want to make sure the firms have a strong bottom line. We're also hearing from partners burnout, honestly. So when I talk about growth and we talk about like revenue growth, sometimes the partners are looking at me with exhausted eyes saying, I am so good. You know, I already have too much work and I don't need more work. And so I think in a lot of firms, it becomes, I like to start with bottom line and say, how do we all make enough income that you want? And then come back to that top line, like we started to talk about in terms of intentionality and focus. Yes, we can grow the top line if you want, but why and where specifically? So we'll get into what we call the quantitative and qualitative vision when we do strategic planning. And we'll say, you know, you want growth. Let's put out numbers in what categories, what service lines, what specific areas do you want growth in? What, you know, a classic one is advisory should be growing faster than compliance, right? Let's look at that trend. And that starts to generate enthusiasm, but also focus on where we're growing and why, instead of a mindless growth of top line and then whatever the consequences below that are just sort of happen to us.
And I'm glad you pointed out the overwhelm, the busyness of accountants these days. Problem sometimes, Matt, is that they say yes to everything and they take on the wrong kind of clients, the wrong kind of work. So they've got that wrong mix. And although they're flattered that the fish are jumping into the boat, that's not strategic, is it? That's quite reactive.
That's right. And sometimes we'll put filters on that and say, even this will tie back into compensation sometimes, to say, I don't want you to just go be a rainmaker. I want you to only bring specific kinds of clients that meet our criteria, because more work isn't always better.
I want to ask you about future proofing. It's a buzz phrase, Matt. Everybody talks about it. Back in the COVID days, we lost the ability to long-term plan because you could make 2-, 3-, 5-year plans before COVID, but then 90-day plans didn't work out because we didn't know what was coming up. With the AI, the automation, the outsourcing, the private equity, it's all changing the way work gets done. So what does future-proofing a CPA firm actually look like these days?
Yeah, I think it's a very timely question. I agree 100%. I think in a lot of ways, the planning window, I still want you to think about the future, but that visibility, it's almost like fog has descended, right? Our visibility has come down dramatically. In that case, what I like firms to do is sort of like when you're on a boat at sea and it's rocky, what do? You look at the horizon and that's still stable, right? And so I want to start there and say, you're reading your feed, you're scrolling your phone, you're getting emails about AI and technology and PE, and it's like swirling in your mind. I want you to look at the horizon. Where do you want to be as a firm? We still care about quality, people, customers, team, right? We want stable growth. Okay, reset. Then back into how. What are the major structures of how? Technology is one of them. Offshoring, my efficiency is going to be one of them. You know, good, strong team. And then in our strategic planning, I like firms usually to break it down into 3 to 5 pillars. What are the 3 to 5 major initiatives that we're not already doing that we kind of need to give outsized focus to go towards that horizon? And those come into 1-year project plans. And to answer your question more specifically, those are monitored throughout the year and those become learning cycles. So if you take your strategic plan and say, this is definitively the 5-year answer and you put it on a shelf and it's stagnant, it's going to be irrelevant in 2 months. It has to be a living document that's a learning and integrated to, this is what we think is going to happen. We're going to take a wager. This is the direction, but let's go 6 months and revisit. And then go 6 months and revisit and learn and iterate.
Well, there's so many variables, isn't there? I just mentioned AI there and private equity, and things come at you from left field and you've got to pivot. And if you don't have a strategy, you're just bouncing from here to there and swapping too much, and change is hard.
Right. Yeah. Then you're feeling FOMO or you're jumping on the latest thing, but the latest thing is always changing.
Talk to us about differentiation. I'm always intrigued by why some firms get chosen and some don't, why some people get hired and some don't. I wrote a book called Build Your Reputation a few years ago and did a TED Talk on that personal brand. And it's intriguing how firms differentiate themselves. I see so many websites, Matt, and you will too, of firms making the same promises, offering the same thing, the same services, having the same values, and they think they're different. So in the crowded marketplace that is out there, a mid to large CPA firm, how do they stand out without falling back to the, we've got great service, we've got great people, we're client-centric, we're really unique.
Very responsive. We do good quality work.
Yes.
I always tell clients, if you take somebody else's website and you change the name and it's yours and it still works, then that's a problem.
Yes, that's great. I'm glad you share my healthy cynicism of that.
It's true. And it's not that, you know, customer service and quality and caring about people are the wrong values or the wrong places to focus as a CPA firm. But how we approach that, I think you're right. It's hard to distinguish in a client's mind, in a customer's mind, how you are different than the next person or more valuable. What we do in strategic planning, we have a 5-I process. And in the early stages, we look at the strengths and values and opportunities of your firm. And it's sort of like identifying your fingerprint. It's probably like your personal brand as a firm. What do we value? What are our strengths as individuals, as leaders, as a firm? And I had one firm I worked with where we had the sticky notes and we were saying, okay, everybody write 5 things that are unique and we're putting them on the board. And this column emerged that said compassion, which I've never seen before or since. And I was like, that's unique, guys. And to them, they didn't know. We're like, this is really unique. A lot of people care or have different ways to say it, but this was really a part of their DNA that was unique. And so once you can see that, we help firms see how they really are different. When you go to the vision, then you say, okay, based on what we're great at and what's our unique opportunities and where do we want to be, with an eye towards how does that differentiate us in the client's market and the client's mind, not our mind. We think we're great. How do we provide differentiated value to them? And it goes back to saying no to stuff. We might have to do less and be not everything to everyone. But that's how you become a specialist and an expert, and you can really be differentiated.
I spoke to a accounting firm once that prided themselves on the responsiveness. I said, so clients choose you because they're responsive. And they said, yeah. I said, well, what does that mean? They said, well, when clients call us up, we're there on the end of the phone. I said, well, my mother-in-law's on the end of the phone when I call her every single time. They couldn't get their heads around, Matt. It's what that enables the client to do when you are that responsive. So it's not the what you do, it's how or why that makes a difference. When you can get to that, what does compassion mean?
Right.
To our client.
Right. What does that mean to your client? What is the impact it has on them?
I love the way you put it up. We can't not talk about talent. You probably see so many firms thinking short term with talent and we've got a gap to fill in a role there, or maybe that's going to be coming up in a few months, but they're not strategic. The talent shortage is real. How can strategic planning address recruitment and success, and not just as HR challenges, Matt, but as key drivers of the firm's future?
Yeah. I think it's a great question. And again, very timely too. That's one, probably if there's, you know, the top one or two focuses, that's one of them on my top two of firms that I've worked with this year.
Yeah.
Let's start with succession. I think that is a strategic issue, because if you can't do that well, it might force a sale of a firm. And we're seeing that, or it might collapse the firm, right? Or put the firm at dramatic risk if it doesn't go well. So it is a big issue.
And I'm sure you've seen that stat, Matt, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. A lot of accountants are scheduled to retire in the next 5 years, and it's top heavy, isn't it?
Just clocking, yeah. Ticking. A lot have already gone, and a lot more are due. And I think, yeah, there's that overhang. So it affects many, many firms, large and small, of all sizes. And it's your most experienced leaders, sometimes your founders, right? Or your managing partners. The way that I've seen it work, or the way it's worked well in strategic planning this year, is many firms I've worked with just haven't, again, it's an elephant in the room, they just haven't been able to talk to each other about it. I've had a lot of firms where I start by saying, give me all the partners, give me your estimated retirement date.
Okay.
And you get the, I don't know when it's, and I'm like, I don't care. Give me an estimate, you know, or give me a range.
Yep.
And people sure enough could come up with ranges. And now I put that in front of the partners. It's the first time they've ever seen it. There's a sigh of relief. And then we start looking at who's going out. It gets a little bit tactical, where you say, okay, well, Bob and Cindy are 2 years out. Who are their clients? How do we transition that client list? Who's going to take it? It leads into a bench strength discussion. Who's next? Oh, nobody's next. Or no, these people are next, but they already have, you know, and it gets a little bit logistical, but people can start to see the solution. And then the last piece is, you know, what's the work going to be, you know, if there's buyout to be discussed or work post-retirement, those can be emotional and financial important discussions, but also the accountability loop. How will we monitor that this is happening? People might see their transition list and then ignore it. So there's got to be that. So when you put that kind of plan in front of people, they have a lot higher ability to execute through it. Staffing is a little bit different. That is a capacity issue. So it's different. It is a strategic issue. I can't grow that revenue if I don't have the team. That's where I like to, again, project out maybe 5 years and say, okay, your headcount's going to go from this to this. And people are like, that's a big number. And I'm like, okay, what are the fundamental parts of your HR system that need to evolve to support that level? You're probably a little bit behind today. Level, you're going to be double that. You know, do we need more learning and development? Do we need a formal mentoring program? Do we need a better recruiting program, training, feedback, path to partner? You might have some of those things. You might have none, you know, like where are the gaps to get to where you want? So at the strategic level, we're sort of looking at the HR function and saying what needs to elevate.
I'm intrigued as to how you get firms to make very courageous decisions, because it's saying yes and no to different things. It's giving up certain things. Just as an example, you're talking there about talent, but let's go back to clients for a moment. Firms try and hang on to every client they've ever had. As you said, it's revenue, regardless of the fit. How do you get them to rank those clients and the D-list ones are the ones they should be jettisoning and pruning to make room for that higher value work? How do you get them to take those courageous choices?
This is one where I get a little bit of glee when I get to do that. A lot of firms need to, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road of like, I've been with this guy for 20 years and now you want...
It's relationship.
It's relationships. Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff happening. Sometimes we'll start with data and say, let's look at the Rosenberg survey, for example. Let's benchmark against IPA survey. You know, does it make sense to keep all these clients? Are the rates where they need to be? Is the realization in the right place? And people are like, no, you know, sheepish, no. And then I say, okay, each partner make your list of clients and rank them A through F. And people maybe have done that. And they're like, oh, we've been doing that for 3 years. Did you do anything? No. Okay. Start, and then that's a little bit of like, I start to poke the bear of like, could you fire your F clients? Or is there anything that could rehab them to move them up to a B or an A? No. Okay. Then, you know, what would it look like to design that communication? And you start to break it down into little micro steps. And then once they've, you know, elevated or ripped out the worst and the staff say, thank you, then it starts to do a little bit of reinforcing loop of like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And we need to do that. And now I work less and I make more and the staff are happy. And maybe next year I'll be a little bit more aggressive and it becomes more of a cycle. So you see the momentum. Mm. But it's breaking down the fear, right? There's a lot of resistance to that.
You talked there about benchmarking and obviously the Rosenberg survey, you know a lot about, Matt. It was originated there. How important is it that firms compare themselves to other firms, or can that be quite dangerous?
I think you want to compare with your eyes open is how I would say it. I think there's a lot of information that could be gleaned from pulling in peer data. I think it's educational. I think then you have to say, okay, what's relevant to us? What are the pieces that, because we might be really different in some ways or have different aspirations or whatever. And then I would say, okay, well, what's relevant for us? It's like a personality test in a way of like, do it, but then what are the four actions that will be impactful to me based on this?
Sure. I introduced a guy called Mark Koziel to a stage in London a few years ago. I was chairing the International Accounting Forum, and Mark's now head of the AICPA. Many people will know that. He was at Alineal at the time, and he very controversially said that the managing partner role is defunct. It's dying because partners cannot be managed. Mm. So I want to bring this to you with the question about partner alignment, because he made a really good point and it resonated a lot with the audience. We're looking at changing business models and maybe a C-suite coming in. And that's where Mark went with his keynote. But in multi-partner firms, strategy can sometimes die, Mark, can't it? Because of lack of alignment. So they've all got the different agendas. It's like herding cats. How do you get a room full of strong personalities to rally around one game plan?
So in my book, I wrote a chapter about influence, and that's how I see it as, I think there, we could go down a whole governance route on the managing partner versus sort of CEO, but.
Well, what is influence, Matt, in your dictionary of life and business?
So I'll give you an example. So I think it takes a little bit of art. I think it can be done. I think it's also complicated. So I'll give you an example. I worked with a $40 million firm this year where they had been debating for years whether they should change the partner comp model. They didn't love their partner comp model, but it's the one they knew, right? And they had a lot of disagreement about what would be different or how it would be different. And so it kind of churned and never went anywhere. One of the ways you can get alignment is I did pre-work, what I call pre-work. So in our initiate stage, I surveyed the partners online and said, how do you feel, Rob, about your partner comp? And like, how do you feel about the system? And what if we did this or this or this? How would you feel? So people told me that without being in a room shouting at each other, I got that data and I looked and they were pretty aligned. It turns out that sort of the time was ripe. And so when I got in the room with them, I showed them the data. We went through some best practices and they voted unanimously to change their comp system. So sometimes I will also tell you, if I just had started that day opening up for open dialogue about it, it probably wouldn't happen that way. I did a little Jedi mind trick there.
Very good.
But I think the savvy managing partner needs to either, you know, bring in a facilitator or know some of that influence to be able to not let the loudest person in the room shout down good ideas.
And it must be so good bringing you in from the outside because you're objective, you are straight with them, you will speak to them honestly, and you're not emotionally involved, are you?
Right. I try to be their advocate for the firm.
Yeah. When we talk about how firms are set up, a lot of arguments come back to pricing. You talked earlier about revenue. Let's talk about that for a moment. Is it a strategy conversation for you, the whole pricing thing, Matt?
It can be. I'm going to say it depends. It depends where they're at on pricing. Some firms are in a great spot. Some firms are in the toilet and or somewhere in between. So I think
Are you referring to the billable hour? Is that a benchmark of where they're at, that their view on the billable hour?
Well, I would think about it two ways. When I think about pricing, I think about are they currently realizing cash for the value they're providing? Whatever your mechanism, billable hour, fixed fee, you know, recurring model, value billing, are you getting what you're worth today is one thing. And if not, we need to get our economics up to that. I think a second conversation is, are you doing services that give you enough opportunity to really get value? I think if I'm specializing in one-off college student tax returns, I don't care what pricing model you pick, you're going to lose, right? There's not a lot of economics there. So I think it's thinking about where can we play, again, back to differentiating, to add a lot of value. And then second, how do we get a pricing model that the client is okay with that lets us realize enough of those economics? I think it really depends on the firm and their situation, but I think it can be those can be pivot points where you can create a lot of money without a lot of change in the organization if you really think it through well.
The great book by Jim Collins entitled Good to Great aimed to differentiate between the good and the very best. I'm just thinking when firms are working to a strategy, they fall down on execution, Matt, don't they? And that tends to be what separates the good firms from the great, the ones that implement well from the ones that don't. What does a firm look like from the inside that is geared up to implement and execute versus one that doesn't?
This is the number one pain point of, strategic planning. And so we did some research of what are your pain points, and then we looked at a little like a micro Jim Collins of like...
Because anyone could come up with a great plan, can't they? It's working.
It's easier. Yeah, it's easier to say, we should, you know, grow in AI and all this stuff. There was three things that came out of our experience and also the research that firms are doing differently who executed really well. Right. The first is accountability. That's the strongest correlated. And it's, you know, nobody likes that word. But accountability is governance. Do you have, you know... To your point earlier, do you have a strong leadership function that is empowered to follow up with the partners in the firm? Do you have clear project management? So like go back to our one-year project plans. Do you have not just good ideas on paper, but do you have project plans to execute those throughout the year that are being monitored and you're accountable to them? Tied to that is leadership and not just the seat like the managing partner, but do you have the true tone at the top of somebody expects you to get it done? Somebody's following up. Somebody's knocking on your door saying, how's that going? Because it's going to get done, and setting that tone, not like, we'll see. So leadership number two, compensation was the other thing that came out of our research. Firms that not like, hey, here's $2,000 if you do it, but like a meaningful amount of partner compensation is tied to the achievement of the strategic plan. It sends a message to say, really, this matters, right? This vision isn't just talk once a year.
Yeah, we're invested in it.
We're invested, and you need to spend time on your calendar every week going towards this, and you'll be rewarded for that. So if you do those things well, it becomes part of the firm's DNA of, like, we set objectives, we give them out to people, we reward them, we perform them, because that's part of how we move forward towards our future.
What's the title of this book, Matt, and where can people get it?
It is strategic. I'm going to have to read the title.
Exhibit A on the video right now.
CPA Firm Strategic Planning, Your Roadmap for Long-Term Success. People can get it on our website, Rosenberg Associates.
Yes. And for managing partners and leaders that are too busy to read a book, they want to get you in. What does that conversation look like? What would be happening in their firm to say, okay, we need to get Matt Rampe and his guys in here?
Yeah. Well, I think it starts by just reaching out, and we can have an intro call and understand. I always want to understand more about the firm and your situation, and what are the biggest things you're trying to get out of this year, not just strategic planning in general, but this year specifically. And from there, we design a custom approach for each firm to get their most important things accomplished.
How would a firm leader know that they can't do it on their own and they need to bring in somebody like you from the outside? Because you do get too close to your own business, don't you?
Yeah. I think the most telltale sign is if you've tried it on your own a couple of years and it isn't working. I think then that's like the, hey, you know, reading a book's an internal isn't working. It's time to bring out a new solution.
That makes sense. This has been great, Matt. I'm going to close with this and then we'll wrap up the show. If there's one question you could put in every managing partner or firm-wide leader's head before they start their next strategic planning session, the next board meeting, the next retreat, whatever it is, what would that question be?
I would say it's kind of a two-part question. I would want them to be thinking about where are we going as a firm and why are we going there? So when we look at change management research, we have to have a strong logical case for whatever we're going to do, but we also have to have a strong emotional case. People want to be inspired. If people are going to follow you, they want to believe that we're going somewhere better. So I think the managing partner should have some idea on their own of what they think that answer is, but also be ready to incorporate other people into that. And if you get both of those really strong in a shared vision, we know where we're going. It's logical, but it also feels really good. We're proud. We're excited. It'd be everybody benefits. Once you have that, you've got a compelling destination that people are going to be excited to get to.
Such a wonderful answer. People want to buy into something they can believe in. They want to be part of a story, don't they? That's wonderful. Matt, this has been terrific. It's clear strategic planning is not just about putting words on paper. It's that clarity, that alignment, that discipline that firms can scale without losing who they are, what they're really about, and what their market differentiation is. We really appreciate your insights here and the work Rosenberg Associates is doing to be a force for good and help firms turn strategy into action. I'm going to ask you in a moment, what gives you most hope for the future of accounting, Matt? So get your thoughts together on that one. For those listening, watching, if you want a deeper dive into benchmarking data and strategic planning resources, you can check out the Inside Public Accounting Report and the Rosenberg Survey. It is the flagship report of the whole year. Two of the best guides in the profession for understanding where you stand and what you can do next. So keep on listening to the show. Keep on recommending the show. Keep on sharing the love. We really appreciate that. Chelsea Summers and I will be back for the next episode soon. Matt, leave us with these final words of hope as a call to arms. What gives you most hope for what's coming up for us all?
I think in this time of change, what gives me most hope is, I'm going to say, shared aspirations. So you talked about difficult partners in alignment. And I think what gives me hope is, again and again and again in different rooms, when you take people out of the tactical or even just the issues to the aspirational field, alignment is so fast. People want very much the same thing. They want hope and pride and joy and, you know, connection and building and growth. They want their staff to be happy and their clients to be well served. And I think that gives me hope every time.
Well, Matt Rampe from Rosenberg Associates, it's been wonderful having you as a guest on Inside Public Accounting today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Rob.